It's the Sod Pod, brought to you by Grassland Agro. The Sod Pod.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sod Pod. We're back. It's season three. We have a smaller crew on than normal due to slight issues with planning time schedules. But I'm delighted here at the moment to have John O'Loughlin and Lauren Stanley with me, two podcast stalwarts. As we face into season three, we're really looking forward to educating the farming community up and down the country again. We're going to bring you some amazing special guests like some we had last year. And I think we'll continue to have the bit of crack. Clear GEA, we hope to reduce the conversations on this year, but that's all relevant if they don't get out of Munster. Lauren wants to cover a sheep special during the year. And John, today you're hoping to do one major story for me. So you could always blend urea with P and K fertilizers. It would have been my logic. But is it possible to blend protected ureas?
It is now, Jim. It is now. So basically, there's been developments in the world of urease inhibitors, and now there's a new inhibitor that's manufactured in New Zealand that is compatible with urea and DAP. So basically, the other urease inhibitors that are used at the moment on the market, we use some of them. Basically, what they do is they dissolve the NBPT, which is the active ingredient proven to work in Irish conditions. They dissolve it in a solvent, and then it can be sprayed onto the urea. Whereas what's different with this product from Glaze Coatings is that you suspend the NBPT in an aqueous solution. So all aqueous means is just water. So a water-based solution like a water-based paint. And you can, because it's suspended, then you can add buffers. So the likes of zinc or magnesium. And what that means is when you combine that, so when you spray that product with the NBPT and the buffers, and then onto the urea, and then you combine the urea with DAP, which is acidic, the buffers will stop the acidity from breaking it down. So that's really important. So it's the key difference with this product is that they are both 100% NBPT based, which is the inhibitor proven in Irish conditions. But the difference is one is in suspension, one is dissolved, and because it's in suspension, it's able to have the buffers applied, which stop the acidity from breaking down the inhibitor then when it's combined with P or K or S or anything like that.
That's brilliant, Johnny. Fair play. And I suppose, look, we've seen a lot of transformation in Irish agriculture from can as we knew it into urea. And now what we're seeing is the new wave, I suppose, from nitrogen use efficiency perspective. And now we're seeing this protected urea. This looks groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's pretty massive, Jim. Like we're very unique in Ireland that NPKs and high NPKs, which would be 24, 2.5, 10, and 27, 2.5, 5. Then your NPKs would be 18, 6, 12, and 10, 10, 20. We're very unique in Ireland that we use a lot of those products, and they make up a significant proportion of the market. And previously, these products were excluded from being made from protected urea. What it means now is that it has all been opened up, so we can get even quicker emission savings. And that's really important. There's a massive target there for ammonia emissions within Irish agriculture, tidying up our carbon footprint. And this is a really positive step forward. It means that we can get more fertilizers onto the market with protected urea. Mm-hmm. And the protected urea, I suppose, is been proven based on a lot of research done by Johnstown Castle and all across the country in AFBI to reduce ammonia volatilization, increase, James, then the nitrogen use efficiency. So you've less going up into the atmosphere, you've more nitrogen available, gets into the plant, and you're away.
You said earlier on, John, when I was talking to you during the week at that conference we were at, that this protected ureas reduces ammonia loss by something like 70% versus standard urea.
Now you have it, James, yeah. So there's like we have a massive problem in Ireland with ammonia. And agriculture is the majority of that as well. So over 90% of the problem with ammonia. So what we can do is obviously low emission spreading, and on the fertilizer side then is switching urea to protected urea. And the other thing though is that from an agriculture emissions point of view, when you look at CAN is 27% nitrogen. Half of that nitrogen is coming from nitrate and half is coming from ammonia. In fertilizer, it's the nitrate is a real bad egg. So the nitrate can be transformed into nitrous oxide. And that is a really potent greenhouse gas. And basically, 1 kilo of ammonia versus 1 kilo of nitrous oxide, there's about 265 times greater global warming effect from the nitrous oxide compared to the ammonia, Jim. So the real thing that we're challenging here is we're challenging that nitrous oxide. We're challenging the ammonia, reducing them. We're being able to have a really good product that, you know, we can put out there. And the format of the products as well, I suppose, Jim, is something that we wanted to keep to as familiar as possible. So at the starting point with us, and there's more to come, will be 18-6-12, so Pro 18s.
Yep.
18-6-12 plus 4.6S. So your sulfur coming there as well. Pro 27s. So 27-2.5-5 plus 3S. And Pro 24s. 24-2.5-10 plus 3S. And they're the formula that we've decided to go with as a starting point, James.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Lauren, if you take all of this major changes coming to agriculture. So on one side, we've huge pressures coming from regulation as we try and reduce, I suppose, the chemical inputs. And, you know, farmers coming under huge stick, and the farmers are responding, you know, in a frustrating manner for us all as we all try to find our way. And now we're seeing this model here within grass and agro, and you know, different scenarios happening. That it's another element, because we still have to be able to produce the outputs to feed the animal or to grow the crop with less chemical nitrogen. This would be huge on the ground for us and for the farmer, that we should be able to, through the protected model, grow more by putting on less.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, John has covered it there in great detail. Like, it's the advancements that it's going to bring is massive. Like, you know, we've never been able to mix NBPT with DAP before, so that's in itself is going to be massive. You know, we're going to reduce the amount of leaching that comes with, I suppose, spreading applications of chemical nitrogen, and reduce that ammonia volatilization, which is massive. You know, farmers are under a lot of pressure as it is, yep. And they're, like you said, trying to stick to as much regulations as possible. And this is just another way of helping farmers kind of stick to those regulations. And yeah, look, it's going to be massive. It's great. Great for the agricultural industry.
Yeah, it's savage. And I tell you what's amazing as well, as we look at everything that's happening within the sector, and obviously our network of advisors are out heavy on the road today, soil sampling, we're then grabbing those samples, putting them into fertilizer plans and all. And look, we're very lucky with to have the likes of yourself and the rest of the team. And John, you know, we've educated our staff so well on the regulations out there. But these are the sort of extra 1 percentiles that give us that extra advantage out there to try and bring the farmer on that journey to, I suppose, grow more for less.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, like, so far, like, John, you might speak a little bit about the trials that have been done, but there's been massive reductions in ammonia losses, hasn't there been?
Yeah, that's exactly it, Lauren. So basically, like, this has been something that we've, and this is the first time that we publicly, I suppose, talked about this range of products that we're launching as well. We want to be an exclusive for our own outfit.
Sod Pod first.
Yeah, big one. So as I said to someone, Ireland's leading agricultural publication. But I suppose in relation to trial work, we've had a long relationship now with Clay. So it was in mid 2022, nearly 2 years ago now, one of our people in grass and agro, Brian Brickley, was contacted by this company, Glaze Coatings, and, you know, said, listen, yeah, like, they said there could be potential to blend. We said, great. So we met them in person. They came from New Zealand. We met one of their representatives. They had a lot of work done on ammonium sulfate and stuff like that, which can be acidic as well. So for your sulfur blends, your 38 or your 40 plus 6. And we said, okay, fantastic. But, like, really, lads, the holy grail is the phosphorus. And he said, listen, it's the same thing. It's acidity that breaks down the inhibitor. So he said, let me go and do trials. So they went to the Lincoln University, which is in New Zealand. They done a 50-50 blend, which is a very high rate of phosphorus. You wouldn't see anything like that in any of the mixes that we just talked about, the 18s, 27s or 24s. And I suppose what that meant was that they done trials over in Lincoln. We said, fantastic. And then we said, they sent us on the result and we said, that's brilliant, lads. But we need to discuss this with our own team in Ireland. And I think the team of researchers that are working on this in Ireland is second to none from what I can see out around in other countries. And that's basically the guys in Johnstown Castle. So we went through it with them. I suppose what was beneficial is that the two different groups of researchers, the guys in Lincoln University and the guys in Johnstown Castle, probably had familiarity with each other. And I think they kind of maybe collaborated in the past. So they were able to say, yeah, like these lads are good guys and good scientists and good research. So that was really, really positive, gave us a lot of confidence. Then obviously we did a bit of a trade mission. So our own MD, Liam Wolf, actually traveled out and met them in person as well. Further added to the credibility, and like the amount of protected urea has grown really significantly in New Zealand as well. But I suppose maybe to rewind a little bit, and I'm going around in circles here a tiny bit, but January 2023, we got some of this product, so it's bright pink.
Yes, yeah.
Now, that was specified by Enda MacDonald, another person who was very heavily involved in this project. Enda said, I want pink, nothing else will do. We said, okay, Enda, we'll play with you, we'll play ball with you. So we got the pink, this pink IBC, very, very thick stuff, and then Niall Curran in Limerick Factory worked his magic. It wasn't something that we had previously, but the guys have driven a lot of innovation in protected urea here, actually in Limerick, through designing new technology to apply these inhibitors. So effectively what happened was that we made the 18s and the 24s product and a couple of other products we'll discuss another day in January, and we tested that product through the year in relation to spreadability, how the degradation of the fertilizer themselves and degradation of the inhibitor. And our most recent test was done in the very first days of December, and the inhibitor was absolutely perfect. So that's a shelf life at the very minimum from January to December, James, which is the 11 good months. So like that's a really, really strong shelf life, which is a common question that we get. Yes. And we're not sure how long more it will go for, because we have to we test again in January. We're waiting for the results back. So like really, really positive.
And John, this stuff as well, like it's non-toxic, it's odor-free, right? But what I'd always be worried about sometimes with coatings, how is the spreadability? Because I know you've done a lot of trials on that as well.
Yeah, so I suppose in relation to the odor-free, that's really important for us, for our factory people. Like they are so, so important. And listen, we don't talk about them enough on the side pod, or, you know, like they work day in, day out, churn out a huge amount of product. They will be working absolutely flat to the mat at the moment for the next 12 weeks, 16 weeks. So like from a handling point of view, it's less offensive. So like that's good for obviously our factory, but from a farmer point of view, maybe some of the early protected ureas were very pungent. Farmers didn't really want to handle them and shouldn't have, because it could be harmful. This stuff is a little bit safer. Still take all the necessary risk assessments and, you know, protect yourself when you're handling any fertilizer. But in relation to spreadability, so these are urea blends, so instead of cans, so that's why we've gone for a grassland range. The thing about urea blends is, as you said at the outset, Jim, we've had urea blends for many, many years, and they're very, very, it's very, very possible to spread them up to 18 meters, but 18 meters isn't the target. You can spread them 24 meters. It depends on a couple of things. It depends on the conditions. It depends on your spreader. It depends on your spreader setup. And sometimes it depends a little bit on the operator now. And I'm not trying to pass the buck here now, Lauren. Don't be giving me those looks now. I'm not trying to get out of jail here now. But like it is very, very possible. I suppose it's just that you calibrate the product, you check the bulk density, you have your spreader set up, but absolutely very, very spreadable. And we're gone for a grassland range to start with, and we'll be looking at a tillage version into the future. But we want to start with a grassland range Because the other big thing, James, is that because the shift door is protected urea, which is completely the right thing to do, P's and K's have simmered down completely, Lauren. I think we see that a lot of farmers have stood back, like the advice is to go for pro urea, but how do you get in your P and K then?
Absolutely. Look, with all the new regulations coming, we're literally just not going to be able to spread as much phosphorus as we would have historically. So we have no other choice in the matter but to change what we're doing on farm, you know. So absolutely, like John, it's a really good idea and it will work very well on farm, you know.
Yeah, and going back to him, like we did a load of spreading tests, like so we had anything from a quad spreader to a wagtail to 24-meter bog bell and braidalls and you name it. So we've tested them all, and we're very, very happy with it. Like product comes in 500 kilo bags as well, which is a big thing, and it works really, really well. And like the emission savings, like we worked out the emission savings, like we got some expert advice from, I suppose, the people who've done an awful lot of the research in Ireland on NBPT in relation to emission factors. And basically what you're looking at for 27, 2.5, 5 and 24, 2.5, 10, you're looking for 50% reduction in the emissions because you're taking out the nitrate component, you're putting in protected urea. So 50% on the two of them, well, 52 and 50% is what it works out. Obviously, the 27s is higher, but we're basically halving the emissions from the application of the fertilizer straight away by moving to these new formulations. So really, really positive, to be fair, and a big win there for everyone to get grow more grass with less carbon footprint.
Yeah, and look, I think it's such a positive story. Look, being involved in the fertilizer industry, lads, it's been a tough couple of years. Obviously, hey, it's been tough for the customer too, supply issues, price point issues and all. The outlook this year is a small bit more positive, and I will be careful in our language, I suppose, on that. But please God, we see a more smooth flow product and at a slightly more competitive price as well. And then these sort of products that just come in and complement everything, you know. Lauren, on the ground out there at the moment, what's the feeling among the farming? What's the farming consensus out there? What's their outlook? Obviously, there's a lot of noise that the milk price is starting to climb again and should continue. Bit of a positive story there. Will grain hold steady for us? How's the farmer feeling?
Yeah, look, I've just been out and about the last couple of weeks, James. It is more positive than you'd actually think. You know, farmers are happier that, I suppose, we're in a better position this time this year than we were last year anyhow. I suppose in terms of fertilizer and purchasing fertilizer, there's probably a little bit of less movement. Farmers may be a little bit cautious, kind of taking it as they need it, and only now starting to think about it in comparison to maybe last year. There was a bit of a rush on and stuff. So look, yeah, it's a lot slower, but I suppose what I'd be recommending is buy it as you need it, get your first two rounds now, or first three rounds now anyhow, and then after that, see how the market goes.
Yeah, exactly. That's brilliant advice, you know. And this year started a lot colder than last year. You know, we've seen two tough cold weeks. Last year, we had that great growth rates through late January and early February, and obviously the weather went against us. You know, this year looks like it's going to map slightly differently, or what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, at least it's trying out though, Jim. Like, the rain was just relentless, like, whereas like the dry kind of, I mean, that windy, to be fair, like I think a lot of people are maybe enjoying the weather if they're not frozen or parlors isn't stopped. I suppose there's a lot of people slating the back out of Chagas there because they're saying, you know, hold tough on spreading slurry there now. But I think the point that Chagas are trying to make is that utilization is going to be poor for a slurry that goes out now. So if you're just trying to take the pressure off, maybe take the pressure off, but don't spread all your slurry because it's still the most valuable fertilizer you have on your farm. Do you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the point that they're trying to make. But obviously, you know, without context, maybe these things get taken up wrong and people are saying, oh, you know, sure, I've been into September or October, I'm bursting at the seams with slurry, I need to go. And now Chagas are saying not to spread it. But I think that's my interpretation of their point on that one, Jim.
Yeah, and it's very
fair. Absolutely. And even if there are farmers out there that, okay, look, a lot of people are under pressure, but even if there's farmers out there that would have traditionally always went the end of January and they're now kind of getting itchy feet, maybe just go with half the rate that they would have just to alleviate that bit of pressure when there is such frost covers at the moment.
The other thing, Jim, is anyone over 130 kilos of organic N per hectare needs to spread with less, which I'd say 90% of them are unaware of. So, like, there's no, yeah. Literally, that's four, that works out at, I worked out before, Darren, is four euros, four lowland euros an acre to get 130 right, or kilos of organic N per hectare. So, like, it is very, very low. Like, everyone needs to spread with less, basically. So I'd say assume that you need to spread with less. If you're unsure, you're a stocking rate, and that is a good job, though. Works well, like, and tried and tested, and goes back to that ammonia piece again, Jim.
That is brilliant. So, due to some feedback we got for season 3, we've introduced a new section. We're introducing What's in the News. So what we're going to do on every podcast, we'll have an old row beforehand amongst ourselves, and then someone will win that battle, and we will discuss something in the farming news that's going down. What's in the news? John won the battle this week. John, you've chosen an article.
Yeah, I chose an article from the Farmers Journal.
By Declan O'Brien. Dairy farmers in derogation secure concessions.
Big one. Big, 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 big. So I suppose we're doing a lot of nutrient management plans at the moment, James. And what's taken up a huge amount of the discussion is actually our farm details page, where we're talking about last year's stocking rate and your proposed stocking rate for this year. And that is massive. Implications for an awful lot of farmers in relation to how many cows they can keep, because the banding was also introduced just before the 220 cut. Obviously now there's the cut to 220 and banding on top of it. An awful lot of farmers are facing, you know, maybe losing one or two rows of cows, which has a really detrimental impact on their profitability, up to 30% some of the reports. So I suppose some of the ways that we can hopefully claw back a little bit of reduction in the organic nitrogen rating of cows is to reduce the concentrate feed proposed in this article to a working body on water quality. So reducing, I suppose, the crude protein of the concentrate during the summer months is effectively the same as reducing the amount of nitrogen that you're bringing onto the farm. So crude protein is just a measure of nitrogen in the feed. So if you look at the crude protein, you divide it by 6.25, you get the nitrogen content. So by, I suppose, reducing that from 15 to 12, where the grazed grass in the diet during the summer would be more than sufficient to meet the 15%, we'll say, dietary requirement in crude protein, then we should be able to save, I think it's up to 6 kilos of N per livestock unit or per cow, which would be a nice little saving. The other things is relation to calves, and this is especially to bull calves, because a lot of farmers, or a lot of the dairy beef farmers, are saying, listen, we need the calves. And with, I suppose, the primetime documentary last year, Jim, there's maybe an expectation for the dairy farmer to hold on to the calf a little bit longer to make sure they're a little bit stronger. But if they do that, then they would be penalised. So an animal from 0 to 1 year old is considered 24 kilos of nitrogen in a year, and if you break that down by month, then every month is 2 kilos of N. And basically what they're proposing is that there'll be a dispensation is in that for the first couple of months as well, so that you wouldn't get penalized then for keeping the calf and providing a better quality product to, you know, your beef farmer neighbor, and which I think is a really positive move.
Yeah, hugely. And Lauren, you voted with John's article. You actually put your own aside, because as you went through it, you had a couple of call-ups that you were really impressed with there. What would you like to discuss on that?
Yeah, absolutely. No, look, I suppose the two main things were the excretion rates for the calves and reducing the crude protein. So like what John was saying in the article, it basically discusses that the excretion rates for calves in the first 3 months will be reduced from 6 kilos to 1 kilo. Okay, so look, it's really, really positive. That's basically allowing us to keep those calves on farm in stock without having the pressures of exceeding our nitrates derogation. So I suppose the two points that were made with the calves and the crude protein is allow, let's say, for example, a 100 cow herd to have an additional 5 to 6 cows. So that's massive, like, you know, because farmers are, they have three options at the moment. They either have to reduce cow numbers or stock numbers, they have to secure more land, or they have to import or export slurry. Do you know, there are three really, really difficult options, and not everyone is in a comfortable position, do you know. So I suppose these measures in this article are just going to really allow to a little bit less stress on farmers at the moment.
The only other one, Jim, just before we wrap up there, is that there's just one bullet point at the end there that proposes a 5% cut to chemical nitrogen. Now, we were kind of intimating that there might be a 10% cut. Mm-hmm. We still don't know, and we're doing nutrient management plans at the moment. So, like, everyone needs to know ASAP, really, if there is going to be a cut and how much the cut is going to be. We do expect there will be something, but there's all sort of different processes to go through. I would be trying to get everyone who listens to the Sad Pod to kind of prepare for the worst and hope for the best, and maybe prepare for a 10% cut in chemical nitrogen, which would be only, depending on your stocking rate, only 160 units or 180 units. And, like, you know, there was farmers in years gone by, James, that would have 100 units out by the 1st of May, mm-hmm. back in the day.
Yeah.
Do you know, so, like, that's a fair shock to the system to either have 60 or 80 units to go. And the point is that spring nitrogen is still very important, but we have to be really, really savvy with it.
Yeah, you're dead right, Johnny.
Actually, just another point from the article was that one of the recommendations should be that 70% grant for slurry storage should be made available as well, which is massive, because that's the issues that we're facing at the moment, and that's where chagas are coming from, I suppose. Farmers are just very, very tight on storage, and I suppose it's not cheap to build more storage, especially if we do have to cut our stocks this year. So I think that grant will be brilliant, and hopefully they'll listen to the recommendations.
That's super, lads. And I'm going to stick a link to that article there by Declan O'Brien, Dairy Farmers and Derogation Secure Concessions, inside the body description of the podcast. So look, we're back. Season 3 has started. We look forward to you tuning in over the next 12 months. Mind yourselves out there. Farm smart, farm safe.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sod Pod. We hope you enjoyed it. Find out more, head over to www.grasslandagro.ie or check out our social channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. That's all for this episode. See you next time.